Computer, show me all popular media outlets of the 21st century.
Searching.
Hold it. This looks interesting. Hailing frequencies. Computer, do we have this on file?
That program is available.
All right. Let's hear it.
You are listening to Hailing Frequencies, the first internet podcast dedicated to Star Trek gaming. This is episode number 34, dated Sunday, April 1st, 2007. Good evening, folks, and welcome to episode number 34 of Hailing Frequency. Today we have something a little bit special for you. We are sitting down with Mr. Ryan Denning, lead concept artist for Perpetual Entertainment's Star Trek Online. How are you doing, Ryan?
Doing great.
Absolutely great to have you here. So first of all, Ryan, would you please tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, living in San Francisco, California, I'm from Canada originally, and this is my first time living in San Francisco. I guess before that, I was working as at an architecture firm in Canada there for 5 years. I designed theme parks and did stuff like Lego and in Germany and various theme parks all over the place. And I guess after doing that for a while, I just really, that whole time, I guess, you know, when I was younger, I loved drawing ships, and I loved thinking about that kind of stuff, and really wanted to get into entertainment art more than just theme parks. So quit that, and worked on my portfolio a bit, and then started applying at some game companies. Worked on one in Germany for a bit, and that's where I noticed the post for a Star Trek job at Perpetual, and that was pretty exciting for me when I applied for that. Guess you probably want to know a little bit more before that, or?
Well, I mean, how long have you been an artist?
Well, I guess since I was a kid. I mean, I always loved drawing. And then, I guess in high school at one point, I wasn't sure, you know, what I was going to do. I was like, I really loved art, but I wanted to get a job, too. So I looked into commercial art and all that stuff. So I went to school for illustration, technical and scientific illustration at Sheridan College in near Toronto, Ontario, Canada. So I guess professionally I've been working since 2000, I guess. So, I guess it's coming to an end. It's 2007, so coming up on 7 years professionally.
Okay, and have you worked on any game projects previous to Star Trek Online?
I worked on one for a bit in Germany, a company called Acne. I don't know, that game's not out yet or anything like that. It was more of a realistic type of game. It wasn't really up my alley. So, like I said, I think Perpetual is really the first definitely the first kind of game I would love to work on. So I have a bit of experience on games. The stuff before at that architecture firm where I worked for like 5 years was very similar in a lot of ways. We did a lot with concept illustration in its own way, and designing everything from props for parks to signs to how things are going to look. So there was a lot of crossover there. But yeah, this was my second actual game project.
Okay, and would you say that you're a fan of Star Trek?
Oh yeah, I love Star Trek. I was a kid, I used to watch it with my dad, the classic, you know. I loved Kirk fighting the Gorn and all that great stuff. And I was a big Star Trek and Star Wars fan. I remember also when the Next Generation showed up, such a big event, we all went over to my neighbors had a bunch of people over, and we all went over there for that opening one. They had the hour special beforehand. So, and when that show came on, I mean, that was really exciting, the way that they realized that ship. And for me, as a, you know, I just loved drawing spaceships. And as soon as the technical manual came out, I was all over that. And it just was such a great. So yeah, I mean, I've been a fan of mostly the sci-fi side and the stuff in the show, but I always like the stories as well. Recently went back. I've been rewatching everything, and you know, just really like the show. Some of it I hadn't seen so much before, like Deep Space Nine and that, which I know you guys probably don't want to hear. But I'm doing my homework on that one, and I'm really liking that show as well.
So, what was it like for you as an artist and as a Star Trek fan to be recruited by Perpetual to work on Star Trek Online?
Oh man, I was so pumped. Because I applied, I saw the posting. Somebody pointed it out to me. Someone said, "Hey Ryan, there's a Star Trek Online game and they're looking for people." So I was like, alright. So I checked it out, and so I applied and, you know, crossed my fingers sort of thing, and hoped to hear back. And when I heard back, you know, I was pretty excited. It was kind of, you know, the reason, you know, I was moving away from just doing the theme park stuff. I really wanted to. This was like the perfect project, and you know, I was super pumped.
So following on from that a little bit, when you got the call from Perpetual telling you that you'd got the job, that you'd been recruited to work on Star Trek Online, you know, this big project, you know, what was your reaction?
Because it's true, I didn't really, I mean, I guessed how big it was and what they were going to do from the description that they had, but, you know, when I went in for the interview and saw just how big, you know, this was going to be and what they were trying to do, it just got me even more excited. They already had some art on the walls and stuff that new stuff from some of the talented guy here named Hyung, who was the only guy on the project for a while. It got me even more excited.
Okay. Folks, we're just going to take a short break now and listen to the Star Trek gaming news, but we'll be back in just a few minutes with more from Ryan Denning. So stay tuned, folks.
Star Trek gaming news.
This is Case Juan Indra with your Star Trek gaming news for episode 34 of Hailing Frequency. Gamona.de, the German website dedicated to Star Trek Online, has posted a Q&A session with Darren Stinnett, executive producer of Star Trek Online. The interview covers a number of popular topics and expands on some things hinted at in the past. Check out the interview at www.sto.gamona.de. Trek Corps has updated their website with ship pages for Orion Pirates and Bridge Commander, as well as full coverage for fan games The Neutral Zone and The Neutral Zone 2, and the Star Trek Voyager expansion pack for Elite Force 1. Check out all of this and more at gaming.trekcore.com. If you are a Star Trek gaming veteran, you will remember the board game that started it all from Amarillo Designs, Starfleet Battles. Well, for any of you who love this old game, head on over to www.sfbonline.com for an official online version of this game licensed by Amarillo Designs. The online version remains true to the board game, with gameplay being almost identical, so be sure to head on over and check it out. A new modification for Activision Starfleet Command 3 has been released. SFC 3 Rebalance Expansion Patch fixes a number of notorious bugs from the original game, as well as adding a few additional ships, replacing planet textures, and more. Check it out at www.sfc3files.com. And that is your Star Trek gaming news for episode 34.
Star Trek gaming news.
I am Kenneth of Borg, and you are listening to the best Star Trek gaming podcast on the internet. Hailing Frequency.
Okay, folks, we are back from the Star Trek gaming news, and we are still here with Ryan Denning, lead concept artist on the Star Trek Online project. And joining us from here on in interview, we have the Hailing Frequency co-host and artist, Caneas. How are you doing, Caneas?
Good. Howdy, folks.
Okay, so before the break, we was talking about what it was like for Ryan to be recruited by Perpetual, and what it was like when he got the call from Perpetual. So we're going to move on now and get on to some of the more hot topics that I'm sure a lot of you out there in the community are waiting to hear about. So, Ryan, we understand from speaking to Darren Stinnett that you are primarily responsible for the recent concept art that was released at the the GDC. These concept images showed off a new starship design, a planetary temple, I believe it was, and a starbase concept. So, I guess the first question is, how much of this was your work?
Well, the temple was done by a super talented guy we have on the project named Rob Brown. He did that temple one. That was definitely an inspiring image. And the other two, I did. So, I guess the Sacagawea and the space station with the little ship in it. That I love to see the reaction on the message boards there about that and guessing at what that looks like. It's real fun to see.
Okay, so I mean, can you tell us a little bit about the design process that you go through, sort of from the original ideas that pop into your head, you know, right through to the final concept images that get released? You know, what are the various stages that you go through in the development of the idea?
Well, I'll give you, I guess, one example. A good example was one of the main ships we were trying to, when we were trying to figure out the look we were going to go for. Picked this one ship called the Excalibur, and it was first what they had done was, it was such a, you know, what are we going to do? So they had a bunch of different artists submit different ideas, you know, just sketches really quick, of shapes and things like that, like what is our next sort of flagship going to look like. And from there, because we met with many people on the team, just trying to talk about it, see what we liked, what we didn't like, and went from there, took some of those ideas, and started working on a new sketch, group of sketches that sort of distilled down a lot of those shapes, and then from there, also took those sketches, and just experimenting with some different ends of the spectrum of what we can do, how far should we go, and then talking again with people on the team, and then picking a sketch that really just really felt like the right way to go, and then taking that sort of it's a sketch, there's detail in it, but it's still very loose, and then taking that to sort of the level that you saw in the Sacagawea, which is not that ship, but that kind of a level of detail, so that it can be built and all that. And I would say that since then, I think one person's kind of on a whether it's a prop or a ship or a character, would do some sort of explore some different ideas, look at the reference and what's been done before. It's always really important to make sure we're in the Star Trek realm, and then looking at those quick, very I guess it's, I don't know, when I say thumbnails, I guess for some people, I guess what that means is just very sort of small, quick drawings that just kind of communicate like a shape or a feel, and then from there, taking it to the next step. So it's kind of a bit of a staged process and allows different people to kind of see what's working and what's not.
I'm glad you brought up the Excalibur, because people have really been going crazy after they read that article at MMORPG.com about the Excalibur, or the ship with a donut hole idea, or a donut hole in the saucer. That's been driving people crazy. Can you explain a little bit more what that means, a saucer that's like with a donut hole?
Well, I saw somebody post an image I think it was like a duck with a donut for a head on one of the boards, and I was like, wow, geez. So no, it doesn't look like a thick donut. I think the idea is, you know, if you took, now not every ship has a hole in it, you know, it's just some of them. It's just something that John Eaves wanted to try out. He always wanted to do, and we were like, yeah, go for it. It's kind of like if you took one of the ships, I'm just going to throw out a name here, but like say you took the Sovereign class, maybe, and you took out around where the bridge is, and you took out that sort of section that comes up to where the phaser banks are, mm-hmm. from the inside to around where the bridge and the armor comes in. If you took that out and you put some windows on the inside there, that's one example. Or taking maybe a science ship that's a bit smaller than that, that might have some sort of a bridge in the middle, and then a ring that maybe they would need to use for various purposes. So I think mostly it was to give us some different shapes in the game, because we're doing a lot of ships, old and new, so it's a lot of familiar faces, but a lot of new ships, and to really get a feel of, in the silhouette when you're flying around, you see these other ships, we really need to try some different stuff. So it was pretty exciting to see John bring those back, bring those out, like, do some holes in the ship. So, I mean, they're very cool looking. Don't worry about when I heard donut, I was like, oh, that kind of feels chunky and gross, but anyway,
well,
so
Mr. Wood, who did the article over on MMORPG.com, he was real impressed by what he saw. The excitement in his article really came through about the images that he was able to see.
Yeah, the Excalibur is a pretty exciting ship. I mean, for us, it was a big deal because it really was just everybody, looked at it and was like, this is definitely the way we want to go. I guess I can try and describe it a bit if you guys would like. Do we have time for that?
Please, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I don't know if I should tell you that, but it's the ship that's in that little blur. That is the Excalibur. It's not the, I think some people were trying to figure out what it was. So it actually, that's the Excalibur. So I know you can't see much from it there, but I guess one of the big things we did was, I know that a lot of fans are not going to be happy, but there are going to be people that are happy, is we sort of took a bit further some of the, on the shape of it. I'll talk about the shape first. The shape of it is more, Darren has talked about it having a bulldog kind of pose. It's a bit more of an imposing. I guess this ship is really meant, it was meant to be a battleship. Now, we don't all have, not every ship is a battleship. We have science ships, we have engineering ships, we have ships that are very different shapes and sizes depending on what their purpose is. But this particular ship was a battleship, and so we gave it a bit of a more aggressive pose. And I went back to that sort of saucer that's a bit more like the same, not so much stretched back, but more like the Galaxy class. Not as big as that saucer, but that kind of the other way. So, it's like an oval, an ellipse. It's a bit more, I don't know what that is. Is it perpendicular to the rest of the ship? So that was the first thing, was getting sort of the overall shape of it. But then getting into the paneling and the details, we sort of took some of the cues from the Defiant and a little bit from Voyager. I've never been too happy with Voyager. I'm sorry if I make any fans upset, but I do like that they had a lot of these sensor bays, exposed sensor bays. And what was cool is that even on that Galaxy class ship, you didn't see that stuff because the ship was so big. But when you saw the close-ups of the rings, the windows along the edge of that guy, and you see the close-up, you see a lot of this sensor stuff hidden in there. So what we were trying to do was to make it look more visually interesting for gameplay, because you're going to be looking at the back of the ship a lot.
That sounds great.
Just adding a bit more of these open areas, and also taking cues from the Enterprise E, which had this really kind of neat second layer of armor, it looked like, over the back, flowing back from the bridge. So try to pull a bit of that in, but making it a bit more, slightly more, I don't know if aggressive, slightly more aggressive, but not, I mean, don't freak out. It's not, I wouldn't say aggressive in the sense of insane, but just a bit more strong feeling than what's been done before. So there's a bit of an open spine down the back. And there was talk about whether, you know, maybe when I was designing it, I was thinking, well, you know, they have a blade of armor now and these fill in things. Maybe that would fill in. But I'm not sure how far we're going with that because of some limitations with the game. But it does look, I'm a fan of the Galaxy class, so it's kind of a smaller version of the Galaxy class, but a lot tougher looking. So,
going back to the other classes in the drawing that was shown to us all, the Sacagawea class, was that an evolution of the Fast Patrol ship?
Yeah, well, that one there, so, you know, as you know, we're like 20 years after Nemesis, so, but a lot's happened, and also because this game has so many ships, we have to come up with, you know, a lot of different ships. And for the fiction of it, I would say that, you know, the Federation maybe had a lot of these designs in mothballs, kind of like the Defiant, how it got put away, you know, and Sisko had to bring it back. You know, maybe they had a lot of designs on their plate. So some of them kind of are supposed to feel a bit closer to that 20-year gap, but we didn't see it. And some of them should feel more like right out of the, you know, brand new, a bit more advanced. So this guy, I was kind of looking at a bit of the Defiant detailing. You'll notice on the front, there's those little openings that are almost directly off of the top of the Defiant. It's got little sensors in it and stuff like
that.
Mm-hmm. Some of the panel cuts, too, but at the same time, I was trying to keep in with a bit of that, a little bit of that runabout kind of chunky feel. So it was kind of a mix of different ideas to try and get a, you know, a ship that was kind of it's probably the smallest. I'm not sure how small we're going to go. Probably no smaller than that in this game. So, and the idea, I was reading on some of the boards about, you know, some people like the nacelles popping out, some people don't. I guess to me it was, you know, just, it's really cool when stuff can move. But also I figure, you know, this thing needs pretty fast warp nacelles to get around like the other ships in the game. So, so that we don't kill the people on board. I thought it was pretty important to pull those out of it, so...
I thought it was a great design for a fast patrol. Well, I thought it was a fast patrol ship, and that's kind of what I think of it as. And so, yeah, wanting the ability to pull your nacelles in close or even under a cowl of armor, since you're going to be doing a potentially heavy combat, I thought it was a great design.
Yeah, that was the other point, was that, yeah, like bringing them in when you're in at impulse there and you're fighting battles. I mean, you don't want... Because that was one of the things about the big ships, I guess it doesn't feel as crazy because they're... on these strong supports and their big ships, and you know, but it's always been kind of crazy that this really important part of your ship is hanging off the back and really exposed. So to make it actually kind of like the Defiant had its nacelles right in close, and that was one of the concerns too. It's just for battle purposes, you know. So another thing about battle, I don't know if you guys are, I noticed some talk about the. Weapons and stuff on the ship, and one of the interesting concerns that we have in the game is that we kind of have to have 360 degree combat possibilities when you're playing. So it's very difficult to just have some phasers on the front for firing. We have to kind of cover our bases, and that's why you'll see a lot of phaser strips on that ship to sort of cover all its angles so that it can fire off of any angle.
I love it.
He does it front back. So,
in essence, in order to cover the combat aspects of the game, we're going to see perhaps ships a lot more heavily armed visually than they have been in the past in Star Trek. Would you say that's accurate?
Yes and no. I think you'll see some ships that are way more heavily armed just because you know, things have changed. There's a reason why the Federation had to pull out all these new ships. You know, it was. Things have happened, and you know, they really had to bump up their arsenal with some ships that are
fighting, perhaps.
Well, no comment.
Well, it seems like an opportunity after some of the older technical manuals really describe ships with way more photon banks and way more phaser banks, it seems that this game can approach what couldn't be done on film or television.
Well, the other thing is, you got to think, too, on the bigger ships, it won't seem as apparent, because if you think about the bigger ships, even in the Sovereign class, there's a lot of, it's got, different forward photon torpedo banks, rear firing, and it also has phaser strips, all around all over it. Same with the Galaxy class, too. It can fire from any angle, hit any ship at any angle, pretty much. So on bigger ships, a lot of ships, you won't notice such a difference. But some of the smaller ones you will, because they're so small and compact surface that, you really, in order to get those weapons on there, it's going to be pretty obvious that, obviously different than, say, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I was really happy when in Deep Space Nine they got the Defiant, because watching those runabouts trying to defend stuff, I always kind of drove me crazy, because they seemed to be ill-equipped for such things, so...
The Defiant always looked pretty badass to me.
Yeah, see, that was when that showed up. I was pretty pumped. So,
well, I'm a Starfleet battles kind of guy, and the more combat for a guy like me, the better. So, yeah, I really love combat in small fighting ships and fighting ships.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about those. But we also have engineering ships and ship science ships with various purposes and. Even medical ships, stuff like that. So to fill those other guys that, don't want to just go around shooting stuff up all the time, there's some other exciting designs that you guys will see.
I think that statement is something that's probably made a lot of people start jumping for joy just now, actually, because I don't think that's something that a lot of people were sure about in the past. So, I'm sure a lot of people are like, yay.
It's difficult for me to answer because I'm not a game designer on the project. Absolutely. So I don't know how the game's going to actually go and all that stuff. But I know that I've got a list of ships in front of me, tons of ships, a lot of new ships, from different races even a bit, too. And some of these are science ships, some of them are medical ships, some of them are tactical ships, some of them are, various kinds of ships. So
somebody on the message boards is going to be thrilled to hear you mention medical ships. They just started a topic on that last week at StarTrekOnline.net.
Yeah, I don't know how many of those we're going to have that are solely devoted to medical, but we definitely have an old friend in there, too, so that'll be good.
I'm thinking the good old Olympus class from the All Good Things now. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, it's a... I don't know whether I like that ship, but it's definitely classic, so yeah, it's got to be... Got to get that one in there, so...
Okay, so sort of just to close off this section of the interview for now, I'd like to ask sort of, I don't know if it's a question that you're perhaps best equipped to answer, but from beginning concept to the final concept to the final sort of modelled in-game constructed vessel, how significant would you say the changes are from, say, final concept to in-game ship? Would you say there's a lot of changes, or maybe some minor tweaks, or
it's interesting because I would say pretty much just like the concept. The Sacagawea, for instance, I mean, it looks pretty much just the same. It's got move-in nacelles and everything. There are minor changes that happen just because as they're making the model, we may see something that's like, let's cut that part off because it's hurting the silhouette or stuff like that. For the most part, though, ships look pretty much spot on. So, for instance, yeah, the Sacagawea, as you saw, it's that's what it looks like. So it's pretty cool. I mean, that's a big priority on the project is because we have a really great concept team here. And, we're putting out a lot of great stuff, and everybody wants to try and stick to it as much as they can. So,
okay, that's pretty good to hear. Right, folks, what we're going to do now is we're just going to take another short break and run one of our usual segments. I think we'll go for Mod Weekly here. So we'll go over to Crosis with some Mod Weekly, and we'll be back very shortly with more from Ryan Denning, lead concept artist for Star Trek Online. So enjoy the break, people. We'll be back soon.
Set a course for Earth. Maximum warp.
Maximum warp. advance to battle stations.
Mod Weekly.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Mod Weekly, only on Hailing Frequency. I am Croesus, the absolute legend, and indeed, modding guru of the Star Trek community. Oh, yeah. You want a mod? You've come to the right place. So, I've got to apologize, first off, for, you know, there's been such a long break, hasn't there? There's been like a month break from Mod Weekly. How the hell have you survived? I mean, I hear you out there saying, Croesus, where have you been? And I'm here to tell you, I've been here all the time, researching and looking at brand new mods just for you and your brilliant little ears that you're now listening to this with. The reason why we weren't on for about a month was because Zach, our brilliant Hailing Frequency captain, our big man up top, was out drinking his ass off and partying. I mean, I'm sitting here in my chair, you know, Internet Explorer blouse. I don't know what I was trying to say there. Internet Explorer browser on my screen, looking for all the latest mods for you, and he's out on the pit. Can I say that? He was out getting drunk. So there you go. Priorities, eh? On today's show, we're talking about Star Trek Excalibur for Bridge Commander, a brand new mod which is being developed by the absolute legends and modeling gurus, not modding gurus, modeling gurus over there at the Bridge Commander community. We're also talking about Star Trek Enterprise Temporal Cold War. Just a little bit, because we don't want to turn this into an Enterprise podcast. So anyway, on to today's show. Roll the funky music. You can't tell I didn't have any dialogue prepared for this week, did you? Now, the story goes, right, that this mod was being developed behind closed doors, right? And at the very last minute, they decided to say, alright, here's all our stuff, this is what we're doing. Drool over it, right? It started off with a USS Voyager. Now, this guy in the Bridge Commander's Central Forums, he's a legend, he's called Legacy. I think he was formerly called LC something or other. He got together with Mark Ward, and he decided to make an Intrepid class. Now, this was on and off for about, pretty much, I think it's about a year. But in the end, they decided to, you know, go full ahead of steam on it. And they made the warp missiles fold, actually, in the game. And I told you about that last time. Now, it turns out that they've actually gone full ahead. They've got all the legends from all the, you know, the community from the past 5 years, they've all come together, apart from P81, and they've decided to do this amazing, amazing new mod called Excalibur. Now, what this is, it's going to have 60 ships, which have been totally remade by all the legends. So you're going to have Legacy. I can't remember the guy's name. I think it's Executioner D. Rob Archer, GT or something. Adonis. You know, they're all here. They're all going to be modeling, texturing, scripting. We're going to have new bridge sets. You know, we're going to have... Actually, wait for this. We are going to have actual, proper, high-poly models for the bridge crew. The bridge crew are going to be completely scrapped and redone with the Elite Force 2 models. Now, you know the crew from Elite Force 2, you know? Those textures and everything, how good they looked. They're going to be in Bridge Commander. And you are going to be able to command this amazing new crew, just like you could in the original game. Now, what's so different about Excalibur that, you know, the rest of the mods have tried to do and pretty much failed? Well, I'll read you some of the Q&A, which Mark Ward did over at Bridge Commander Central. And he writes, "What is Star Trek Excalibur?" Well, Star Trek Excalibur is an overhaul of the accessible parts of Bridge Commander. We will be replacing and improving everything we can. The project includes a new story, a new interface, an updated set of scripts, new bridges, and new ships. When completed, there should be very little left of the old Bridge Commander game. How long has the project been in development? Well, LC had the concept for making a new campaign in early January. The team has been put together since January, and the work has been moving on since then. How large will Excalibur be? Well, He writes, it's hard to say at the moment, but he wouldn't be surprised if it reached over the 1 gigabyte mark. So, you know, by the time it's released, you people better be getting 10 megabyte broadband or something close to that effect. Now, how complex is this mod gonna be? They write, it's gonna be extremely complex. We are replacing absolutely everything in Bridge Commander, so the project includes everything from scripting, modeling, animations, right through to voice acting. Did someone say voice acting? Guys, if you want me, I'm available for hire. How far along is the mod? Well, they don't have a release date, so don't bother going to their web and start asking, alright? Don't bother going to Bridge Commander Central and start going, oh, well, when's the release date? Can you tell us when it's released? Don't do that, right? The trailer was released, and you can view that on YouTube or on Bridge Commander Central, on the thread of Bridge Commander Central. Now, what types of ships will be included? Well, they intend to put every single canon ship in that game. And they're also including some fan designs, since the story is set slightly after Nemesis. Are there any plans to update the mod once released? No. It shouldn't be necessary. And when is the release date planned? Here's the big one, alright? Autumn next year, alright? Around autumn next year. So, you know, don't go to the website and ask, oh, when's the exact release date? When can I get my hands on this? The fact is, it's not done yet. It's nowhere near done. It's going to be for autumn next year. You can view that lovely trailer either by going to Bridge Commander Files, which is www.bcfiles.com, or you can go to YouTube and search for Star Trek Excalibur and view the trailer. And you will be amazed by some of the models which are being developed. I mean, everybody here that is developing this mod are legends. I mean, they've been in the community for years. So, you know, check it out, watch the trailer, and your jaw will hit the floor. Now, over the next coming weeks, I'm going to try my damnedest to get an interview with someone from that mod. So, guys, if you're listening, I'm coming to get you. Also, Enterprise-TCW, yep, there's that mod again. It's released Media Release 11, so I'm going to try and get another interview with Captain Source or some of the other members of the crew to talk about this media release. Now, if you're wondering what's in this media release, it's got some renders, well, not renders, in-game shots of the warp core. It's got some shots of Deck F, which is pretty much, it's like a torpedo storage room sort of thing. It's also got a nice render of Lieutenant Reed's player model, so you can go there and drool over that. It's also got some photos of, photos? What am I talking about? They've got some in-game shots of the HUD, which is the little, the little display icons which tells you about your health and your weapon selection and stuff like that. And wait for this, the big one. They have an in-game video of the warp core. Now, you can see all the brilliant little animations and stuff over the core and the front of it. I mean, this thing looks... It looks like it's getting there, you know? It looks pretty real, but it's not quite there yet. You can tell it's a work in progress. And man, does it look good. It's not even in the beta stages yet, and it's, you know, amazing work. Go to www.enterprise-tcw.com and visit the boards and support them. Also, you can vote for them by going to the website forums, and they've got a big banner in red which says vote now at mod database. And this is pretty much a database which holds all the mods for Half-Life 2. And the users can vote for the best one, and it goes up the leaderboards and stuff like that. Now, it's recently been at number 3 and number 1, so it needs your help, it needs your support. Go and vote for them, and that's pretty much it for this week. I've been told to keep this short this week, so I'm going to end a couple of minutes early. So it's back to Zach on the main Hailing Frequency podcast. Until next time, which is not that long, keep safe and well. This is Krosis, signing off.
Greetings from Birth of the Federation 2. We could use your help in game development. We are a group of fans developing at least 4 separate games inspired or related to the old microprose game called Birth of the Federation. Being fan-based games and using the Star Trek universe, the games we develop will be made available for free. None of us get paid for our contributions. When I played the original Birth of the Federation game years ago, I saw more potential for a truly great game than was actually realized. Think, if you will, of how the new Battlestar Galactica TV show, or the old Star Trek The Next Generation TV show, improved on the original concepts. Developers of these new games also saw the potential for some greatness hidden in the Birth of the Federation game. We are going after that dream. We are located at botfii.armadafleetcommand.com. And we are looking for new members to help with such projects as ship models, computer graphics, original music, and recording of game monologue and programming. It would be nice if you have years of experience in these areas, but we can help you train to do these jobs. Again, that is botfii.armadafleetcommand.com. Come join our collective. We will add your biological and technological distinctiveness to our own. Be a part of new game development.
Resistance is futile.
Listening to Hailing Frequency, the hottest podcast on the internet.
Okie dokie, folks, we are back from Mod Weekly. I hope you enjoyed that with Krosis. Be sure to post him some feedback over on our forums at hailingfrequency.co.uk/boards. So we are still here with Mr. Ryan Denning, and I am going to let Caneas take the opening question for this segment, as he brought up a rather interesting subject in the interlude. So Caneas, please.
Alright. Well, one of the big things in MMOs is how you treat the source material. On the ship designs, how closely are these going to be following, let's say, Star Trek technical manuals or the Franz Joseph designs? Are they going to be sticking to canon?
Well, that's a good question. For me, when, like I said, I think earlier, when I was younger, I picked up that Star Trek technical manual for the Galaxy class starship, and I loved that thing. I read that thing. Got lost somewhere in there. And it's funny to learn later at Memory Alpha how much it's not actually considered canon, because there are some discrepancies with what was on the show and stuff, and I find that kind of interesting. But for the most part, for me, it's a big deal to try and get as much of that stuff on a ship. And also, at the same time, trying to think of things that maybe has changed, little things that have to do with sort of gameplay. And also there's a time constraint that we have when we're doing these things, because we don't have, we've got a lot of stuff to draw in a short amount of time. And I think compared to, I know on the show they have tight schedules too, but usually when they would bring out a new ship, it was a pretty big deal. I definitely try to keep as much of that stuff in there. I definitely am thinking about the little, I'm thinking about the Sacagawea, what's on there. There's some exhaust vents and some sensor pads. The interesting things are the torpedoes and stuff, depending on the size of the ship. Try to remain as canon as possible. But like I said, it can be kind of difficult. For me, half the fun is getting that stuff in there. And also, that's what kind of makes it feel like Trek. It is kind of weird, though, because over the years, the changes between ships, between the Galaxy class and the Enterprise E and the Defiant, there's such a, even within those ships, they seem to be breaking some of their own rules sometimes. So it's kind of picking from that a bit, trying to add what you can. And I think, too, some things, some ships you may wonder, hey, because the other thing is we haven't labeled everything. and maybe it'd be fun to go back someday and really go through these drawings and make sure everything's properly labeled. Because when we do the concepts, we can't label all the little details because we only label things that are going to be pertinent to the modeler who's going to build it. So if we put too much stuff on there, it might get confusing for them. But it would be really fun to go back and really label a lot of this stuff. I mean,
that would be fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We'll see time, and you know, there's going to be so many ships. It'd be a huge undertaking. But the fun thing is that I know that people who are out there will take them and do it themselves also, which is what's really great about the fan community.
Oh yeah.
Because do that already. I mean, I think most of the details on these on a lot of the ships, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the Star Trek magazine, but a lot of the stuff comes from fans to really filling the stuff out and figuring out where stuff went. And, over, and it's also neat to look at the Ex-Astris, I forget how that's the proper way to speak it, speak their name, but they've got that that section about technology or whatever, where they go through and try and figure out what could happen and stuff like that. So it's definitely something that we're mindful of, and definitely something I try to get in as much as possible. But making it visually interesting is the primary thing for me, and I think, you know, it's got to look good overall, and I think that's the big challenge, is making it look good and making it feel like a Star Trek ship, because, you know, we do so many different shapes, and one of the only, sometimes on a ship, the thing that brings it down to Star Trek is all the little details. And so some ships you'll notice that have old, you know, you'll see escape pods that look just like the ones on Sovereign class. And sometimes you'll see some that look from another ship, and sometimes they're hidden beneath the paneling. So there's things like that, too, where people may wonder, well, where is that thing? And, sometimes I'm thinking, you know, well, maybe they found a way to hide it under the armor because, you know, it's important to hide that stuff and still have it work. So, but it's definitely, you know, it's definitely something that's fun to see in the forums and sort of see, okay, you know, maybe on some things it's, you know, you got to be a bit more clear, and on other things, you know. You know, it's only so much time, so...
Absolutely, yeah. Certainly understand the time limitation.
Well, hopefully this will be the MMO for Star Trek for the next 40 years. So, plenty of time.
You guys are definitely going to have a lot. It was funny, I was thinking, man, if they're talking about this, about one ship on the forums, and then also about the little blurry ship on the space station, you know, it's kind of... You know, people are going to... There's so much new stuff, and there's so many cool ships from... you know, John Eaves has done some really awesome stuff. So, you know, it's pretty exciting. I mean, it's hard to contain it all. Like, we can't... it was really fun that we had some people touring around, and where when new people come on and get to see what we're doing, everybody's really excited. So I can't wait to share more stuff with you guys.
Hey, real quick, speaking of John Eaves, at some point in the show we were going to mention that StarTrekOnline.net... a website for Star Trek Online. They just did their first podcast and had an interview with John Eaves.
Yeah, John was in and he did it here.
It was a fantastic interview.
Yeah, John's a great guy. We had a lot of fun working with him, and really great guy to work with, and super talented. So, I mean, that was a real opportunity for me. I mean, you can imagine a fan of Star Trek to, you know, and drawing stuff and, like, looking at drawings from a guy like John Eaves, you know, and that was the stuff that, you know, I wasn't even done college, you know, and he was working on Star Trek. And so, you know, just to actually get a chance to work with him and talk to him about, you know, how he does things and just see him work was a real exciting opportunity for me. And I think for all of us here on that concept team, I mean, it was a real thrill to, you know, just work with the master himself. So
I think it's great that they actually have veterans from Star Trek in there. The more the better, in my opinion.
It's... super important to us to, you know, it's a Star Trek game. I mean, it's a game is the big thing that a lot of fans probably need to know is, you know, we're trying to make this a good game. And so some things, you know, we've excellent writers who are fans of Star Trek are going to make it fit the fiction as much as they can. But, you know, it's also super important to us that it's a Star Trek game. And, you know, so to get a chance, you know, we've got to get as much, you know, to have somebody like John Eaves in here to, you know, lead the charge on that, you know, really, really helps us out.
Hey, if anybody wants to check out the interview that StoneNet did with John Eaves, head over to, I think it's stowcast.net, and you can listen to the interview they did with John Eaves there. So moving on a little bit now, and on to one of our next sort of questions. A little bit of a deep one this is, so I hope you don't feel too intimidated by it as I'm reading it out. But as it was put to us by Darren Stinnett, you are pretty much the man... Well, you and your team are pretty much in charge of taking Star Trek into the 25th century, evolving the entire design and concept of Star Trek forward in a way that not only has to be true to what people have seen in the past, but also in a way that's going to be accepted by the fans. So, I mean, for any artist, no matter how skilled, that's got to be such a daunting concept. So, I mean, how does it feel to be the man charged with taking Star Trek into the 25th century?
Well, you know, it's kind of, that is a big, big question. It's definitely something that I think about. But, I mean, we have such a talented team here, such great individuals, like, on the whole board, not even just the concept art team. But, you know, that makes it a heck of a lot easier to think about, knowing that there's so much talent that we have here at Perpetual. So, you know, that's one thing that just makes it a lot easier. As far as moving it from the old and to new and making it so that the fans are, you know, love it just as much as we do, you know, the first thing is I got to remember, you know, I'm a fan myself and we're fans here. And, you know, we're trying to make, you know, we want to see this look awesome too. So I think looking at the old, since I'm a fan of, I think, you know, my favorite series is the original series. I just love the classic Trek, and I love those characters. But you know, so I have a love for the whole range. I mean, I wouldn't say the old Enterprise is my favorite ship, but I have a great respect for all the series and all that stuff. So having such a great library of stuff to pull from. Is great. Evolving it to the next stage, I guess one of the things is we're not super far in the future. So it's not like, I guess on Enterprise series, they had the Enterprise J, which I don't know what you guys thought of that ship, but I wasn't too pumped about it. But we're not like that far ahead. So I think trying to keep it in the realm, I think that's going to make sure that a lot of fans are happy because it's not so distant.
Right.
You know, it's not like a totally different... I mean, we're definitely doing stuff that they've never done on the show. Being a game, you know, we have opportunities to do things that they just couldn't do on TV. I mean, or in movies, because of, you know... In the TV show, they're always restricted by, you know, especially in characters, it's a big one. You know, we have a guy here, Hyung, who did up The Bourne. I think that... It was written up on in an article somewhere, too, a little bit. Nobody's seen the image yet, but we've taken that guy in the rubber suit and just... And even the one they did in the Enterprise series, I didn't think it was super impressive either, but he's done an awesome job of just making this guy feel like I think he should have, even in the original, you know? Like, he's an alien, and he's, you know, got this sort of reptilian kind of feel. I mean, I'm excited, and I think the fans are going to be excited with what they see. I'm not too stressed out about it. I mean, I remember when I was talking to John Eaves about that problem, because, you know, it's a pretty big... You know, he did that when he was doing the Enterprise-E, and he was talking about even how... even for that ship, you know, how there's fans that were very unhappy with that ship. So I guess it's kind of a funny thing to think about, but... all I can do is, you know, we're trying to make something super exciting and visually exciting so that when players get in there, I mean, maybe there's a bit of a bump for some fans who were expecting to see the TV show, but I think it'll be easy to get over because it's going to be, this stuff looks so great. I don't know, does that really answer your question?
I thought so.
Yeah, I think it does. I think it answers it quite well. Mm-hmm. And it sort of leads into the next thing that we was going to ask. But leading on from the original question, you know, in the past with Star Trek, you know, going from the 22nd century through to the 23rd, you know, 24th century, we've seen quite a logical advancement in terms of the look of Star Trek. But on in terms of on the big screen, you know, what we've seen on TV and in the movies, the changes that we've seen in Star Trek have been quite big jumps. We've gone from the original series into the Next Generation, which is like 80 years, and the next and the Next Generation through to sort of the end of Voyager, which is a good, you know, 10-15 years. There's been some logical development there. With Star Trek Online being set sort of 20 years after Nemesis, and I think the best sort of comparison is sort of going from the original series into the motion picture sort of era, that, you know, it was 20 to 30 years. And there was sort of a very logical advancement in terms of the technology, for example, on the Enterprise. It went from being sort of this antique thing from the original series into a more dynamic, modern-looking ship for the motion picture. So, I mean, based on all of that, what do you anticipate are going to be some of the, you know, the subtle and the major changes that we're going to see in terms of Starship design in Star Trek Online, other than the donuts?
I think one of the ones that was sort of touched on before is you are going to see some ships that look a bit more battle-oriented, just because that's kind of been the big lacking part of the, I think, the Federation's arsenal. I mean, things have changed, some big events, and, you know, it's time that, I guess, the Federation, you know, they needed some ships that were just dedicated warships. So I think that's going to be something that stands out a bit more than before, because we didn't really see a lot of that. In terms of the looks of the ships and sort of the technology and the advances, I think we've done a pretty logical advance. A lot of the same things that fans will recognize are on these ships. You know, it's still got the, you know, still needs two nacelles to make a warp field. You know, maybe there's, I think one of the things is some of the things we can probably fit into smaller spaces, more power output probably as well, say for warp cores and things like that. But the visual look, I think we've made things a bit stronger looking, a bit more, I think there's a bit more of an armored feel to some of these ships, not armor like like chinky kind of, or like tank armor. Very, I would say that very Star Trek feel to the armor, kind of riffing off of what John did on the Enterprise E, kind of taking a lot of those cues just a bit further. I think too, one of the things I liked about the Defiant, which was cool, was the way that they started breaking up the panels on the ship. I think before we'd seen, like, the Enterprise E, we'd seen a lot of, or D, we just kind of, a lot of square panels and things like that. And then on the Enterprise E, John started to, actually, it looked like a lot of patchwork from some of the ship shots. It's a lot of little panels, which has a cool visual effect. But in the Defiant, it was neat that the panels and stuff were cut in kind of different shapes and things like that. And to me, that felt a lot like a neat kind of way to go too. So I think there's other things like uniforms, you know, adjusted the uniform too. I know you guys are probably pretty eager to see that. Brought that 20 years ahead also. Also, I'm trying to think of other things. I mean, that image of the station is kind of a good example too. How it looks pretty classic in a lot of ways. It's got a lot of similarities to the mushroom mixed with stuff that we saw on Voyager. I think it was just Jupiter Station. The stations that were out, I can't quite remember. There were like two pods with the poles coming down. But trying to mix a lot of that, but then adding something in there that's something that we haven't seen yet. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's definitely a very dynamic answer.
Ryan, I was hoping you could help us figure something else out. Another question that's been bothering people, or they've been talking a lot about on the boards this last week, is realistic versus stylized.
Uh-huh.
And I was hoping you could talk a little bit about that to the folks out there.
All right. I've noticed that written up too. I mean, there's a lot of confusion too, because some people will look at, say, the temple concept art and be like, wow, that looks pretty awesome, and then wondering, well, what does stylized mean, you know? And I think some people worry, is it going to look like cartoony, or what's going to look like? And I think, to say from a concept art side, as far as stylized goes and characters and stuff, I think one of the things is the constraints of the show was everybody was a guy in a suit or a guy with makeup. I think on Voyager they did the species and something or other. I can't remember the number, but
8472.
Thank you, 8472. And they did they brought different shape in there. I guess on the Enterprise series they showed the Tholians a little bit more fleshed out. But other than that, usually still Star Trek's known for having its guys in the suits, and we're gonna have those guys too. But one of the things we tried to do from a gameplay point of view is that you get, when you pick your characters and you see people, we want you to recognize who they are from further away. So it's not just that the guy has different makeup on, he has a bit of a different feel. So a Klingon would stand a bit bigger and feel a bit, feel much like they are in the show, except a bit bigger. And just kind of accentuating some of those characteristics that they have. Vulcans might be a bit skinnier feeling, and just picking different shapes. But even the humans is mostly to make them a bit more dynamic and exciting. Also, in game, I know a lot of, there's the Star Trek fans, but there's also the MMO fans, and in a lot of these games, you're up in a camera that's pretty far back, and when you're walking around and you're seeing people coming towards you, we really want you to be able to pick this stuff out. So the architecture too, some things are just a lot bigger than you might have expected, say in the series, but it's more of a to solve a solution from a gameplay point of view, so that it feels right. So I think the stylized, I wouldn't worry about it feeling like a anime or something like that. I don't know what people are worried about, but it definitely feels Star Trek. I think originally there were some old screenshots that got out before they released a bunch of stuff, and even old concept art of the characters and stuff, and it was trying to go just like the show. And one of the things that just came out of that was, that's cool for novelty's sake, but, is that really going to be something that you want to, can we make it more compelling? Can we do something more exciting with it? And like I said, a lot of Star Trek fans on this project who want it to be really awesome. So, you got to take my word for it, I guess, but I think you got to rest assured that stylized in this sense is a very good term. And all the people that have come in and seen this stuff, some of those articles, I guess, that you probably read, it's obvious that people have come in and seen some of the stuff we were doing, and everybody's really impressed and excited with what we're doing. So, I wouldn't worry too much. It's not going to look like the show, but I think it's going to be a much better experience than if we had tried to make it look just like the show.
Okay, so just to clarify a little bit, a couple of months, I think it was, must have been 9 or 10 months ago now, at least. There were some screenshots released, or some in-game images released of the not the Enterprise D, the Galaxy class ship. We saw the corridors, the briefing room, etc., etc., and they looked pretty damn photorealistic.
Yeah.
So are you still going for that sort of level of photorealism, or maybe not quite that realistic now, somewhere in between that and something else, sort of?
I have to field a bit of that question, because, a lot of that has to do with the guys on the engineering side, the modeling side, game design, and things like that. Probably not as photorealistic as was shown in those shots. That's definitely something that I'm pretty sure has changed. I think that there will be a very consistent feel to the game, though. And I think that when you're playing in the game, you definitely feel immersed in that world, and just as much as you might be the other way. But I think that this will be a much more visually pleasing and interesting way that we're taking it. Like I said, it's definitely not a cartoon or you know, it's not a World of Warcraft painted, you know, everything's, I guess, just kind of storybook feel. It's not that. So I don't think people have to worry about that. It's definitely going to look really awesome. From the stuff that I've seen that they have produced in the engine and stuff, it's very impressive stuff. So.
Okay, then. Thank you for clarifying that. Folks, we are going to take another short break now. I think it's time we listen to some Fleet Radio. So we'll listen to some Fleet Radio, have a sing, a song, a dance, and we'll be back very shortly, where I think we'll probably start closing down or closing off this interview with Mr. Ryan Denning, lead concept for Star Trek Online. So we'll be back shortly, folks. Stay tuned.
This broadcast may not be used for commercial purposes.
Fleet Radio.
Conspiracies, conspiracies, conspiracies. Somebody always seems to be pulling the strings behind the scenes everywhere I look. Look at us, here in the 24th century, and still we can't get rid of them. Conspiracies in the President's office, conspiracies in Starfleet and Starfleet Command, conspiracies all over the freaking UFP. I know you got an eye on me, but I got an eye on you too. You're listening to Fleet Radio. That was Ken Linderwith, man behind the curtain from dmusic.com. Dmusic is one of the oldest online digital music communities on the net. Need music? Dmusic. Dmusic.com. Fleet Radio was created to promote the idea of radio and media in Star Trek Online.
Fleet Radio. Hey there, Star Trek fans. Are you tired of the endless arguments on the official message boards? Well, if you are and need to take a break, get stoned. That's right, stoned. A Star Trek-inspired cartoon found only on StarTrekOnline.net. That's Star Trek, that hyphen thing, online.net. And while you're there, check out Stowaways, the original Star Trek Online cartoon that inspired Stone. So, my friend, if you need a break, get stoned.
Howdy, folks. This is Bob, a.k.a. Captain Robert J. Collins from the United Federation of Planets Defense Fleet, a group with seasoned and new players alike. We're a Star Trek simulation group interested in attracting simmers. What is a Star Trek simulation group, you might ask? Simply put, collaborative writing. You and several other players essentially write your own story, your own Star Trek adventure. You can join me on the USS Tiburon, an Excelsior-class starship, or perhaps any of the other ships that we currently offer in the setting 2382. Come by and visit us at http://www.ufpdf.org. That's http://www.ufpdf.org.
You are listening to Hailing Frequency, the internet's hottest podcast, dedicated to all you Trek gamers.
Okay, folks, we are back from Fleet Radio. I hope you all enjoyed that. Took the time to whack up your speakers, have a little dance, get some coffee, and buckle up for the last part of this interview with Mr. Denning. So, before the break, we were talking about what is going to be like for you to sort of be taking Star Trek forward into the 25th century. Some of the major and minor visual changes that are going to be sort of implemented in terms of starship design. I think we covered that pretty well. Something that we wanted to ask that kind of leads on from that a little bit. In terms of the visual changes that are being implemented on ships, I don't know what the best way is to word this, but sort of you're sitting there designing a ship, you doodle something onto the ship, and you think, oh, hey, that looks cool. That looks cool, let's leave it on there? Or do you go on from that point and think about the technological sort of viewpoint and the canonity sort of viewpoint and how that really cool little change is going to affect the ship and how it's going to affect the performance and how it's going to sort of... how it's going to affect canon in terms of Star Trek? I mean, do you get that down and dirty in terms of the ships that you're designing, or do you not quite go to that level?
Well, I think every ship definitely try and think about what everything is. I think first of all, it's getting the general shape down, like what looks cool. And then, yeah, if there's some little thing on there, or if I'm putting a hole in something, I try to get some sensors in there, or I try and get some, shuttle bay or some sort of weapon or some sort of, something that will excuse why that thing is there. As far as making it, getting as canon as I can, it's sometimes hard to figure out because, I mean, did a lot of research and looking into ships we have seen, and it's kind of funny to see there's so many differences that it's hard to sometimes wonder too, like, wow, what makes this ship what's on this ship that makes it work and versus another one. I think a lot of the ships are done well like that, but for instance, I think one of the funniest ones was the Steam Runner. And we've actually found the real reference of what was in the movies. Such a low-res model that they used in that it took fans to really figure out, what does this thing actually do? What are these parts? And what's back here? And we actually had to go back and find some of that stuff to put into, our version of the Steam Runner, because we couldn't put a low-res, can't put a low-res thing in there. So, for me... I like to make sure it feels like you know, if this showed up on a show, would it be believable? Or one of the movies, would this be, you know, would people buy it as a Trek ship? I mean, of course, a future, 20 years in the future movie. But, you know, as far as overall performance of the ship, the most biggest thing that I worry about is making sure that the weapons can fire, you know, and that it's got the main components. But as far as the shape of the ship for performance, I mean, are you sort of talking about that as well? Or, because I think Star Trek ships come in all shapes and sizes, which is kind of what's really cool about Star Trek too. I mean, there's that definitely something about it that makes it Star Trek, but, you know, they've done so many different, like the Oberth is one of my favorites because it just has such a cool design to it. And to me, it's, you know, exciting to be able to think that, you know, Starfleet's got some neat designers in there and trying to come up with new and different ways to make their ships. So I don't know.
Ryan, are you also working on environments and locations?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, that's something that we haven't talked. We talk about ships a lot, but mm-hmm. we actually have. You know, there's four of us in house right now, working on stuff. I mean, we got characters, we got architecture going, we've got environments, and then there's also like Rob Brown working out of house, putting stuff in. With environments, he's working on Klingon stuff, which is really exciting. And I just finished doing looking into what a Vulcan sort of colony / town would look like. And so that's something, again, it's kind of a similar approach to ships, is taking what we've seen in the show. Environments in the show are really funny. I mean, if you analyze the show, I mean, I think I even saw one time I was watching Next Gen and saw the top of the backdrop, the frame that held up that big sheet they just shot with light in the frame. You know, it's kind of like, you know, so we can do a lot more with our environments because, you know, we don't have to worry about, you know, sets and things like that. But also really working out some of the stuff. So, yeah, working on environments, and that's a lot of fun, too, to look at. So,
what are some of the most exciting location images you've seen so far?
Oh, well, some of the space images have been really exciting. I know that some fans are going to just want black dots in a big black realistic-looking space, but we decided not to do that. We've got some really exciting space images from Rob Brown, and some of those environments are my favorite just because it just looks so impressive. As far as ground environments, you know, there's still a lot to tackle. So it's kind of hard to say at this point. I mean, the one I got most excited about recently was this little Vulcan town. It was a lot of fun to go into. I think there won't be a shortage of exciting environments. And also the way that it's shaping up, the guys who are actually building the environments in, you know, how they're going to actually be realized in the game, was seeing some really... really exciting stuff. It's really fun to walk around and fly around in this game.
You know, something I realized that we haven't actually asked yet, and probably should have, I'm kind of slapping myself on the wrist that I haven't asked this. who are the people on your concept team? What are their names, please?
Well, I'll tell you so that people can, fans can, you know, annoy them for the rest of their lives. We have guy Brian. Hey, Brian, you guys afraid if I share your names?
What?
No, okay, so we have we have Brian White, who's super. We got everybody's super talented. I was going to say that already. But we got Brian White, who's been doing a lot of props and architecture stuff like that.
Hi, Brian.
And we've got Ocala Bellows, who's working on characters and creatures mostly, and done some props and stuff too. A lot of these, you know, all of us may branch out and doing different things throughout the project, but then we have Kung Nam, who also has his own theme song, which he doesn't like us to tell, but it's based off the YMCA song, Kung Nam. He's doing a lot of characters, he's doing environments, and pretty much everything, too. He's the guy responsible for the Gorn image, which I'm sure he also just designed a Mugatu revamp too, which doesn't look like a mascot.
Woohoo!
So yeah, it's pretty exciting. So that's, and we also have, like I said, Rob Brown who's doing awesome work. Really, he's not in. You know, he comes in, and we wish he could hang with us all day. But and then we have John Eves working with us, and we're looking to bring on some more people too. So yeah, we're a pretty big concept team.
Absolutely. We heard pretty early on that you'd got Mike Okuda on board. Is he on board, and do you work with him, or?
Well, that was a while ago. Actually, that was before I even got on. I think that was. I think there was even some of his stuff posted at one point for user interface stuff. I think was a lot of the stuff he was looking at. So I think that's been abandoned for now. We've kind of taken a bit of a different approach. I don't know. I mean, there's still a lot of time to go. So I guess at 1.2, there was stuff that people saw on the internet too by Andrew Probert, which kind of bummed because I started working here after he was here too. But, you know, we may take that up again. I don't really know at this point. I think the plan from here on is pretty much just the team we've got inside. I think we have a pretty good foundation, you know, and we definitely benefited from having these guys, you know, these classes and the opportunity to have, you know, work on a project that has guys like Mike Okuda and Andrew Probert, and that actually, you know, touched the project at one point. It's just exciting enough. So,
are most of your team traditional artists and working in traditional mediums, or are they mostly working in digital mediums right now?
Actually, we got Brian is our, you know, he's right now watching him draw on his light table. So he's pretty old school, but he also takes it into the computer and does it all up. So he's, you know, he's well-rounded and individual. The rest of us, I guess a lot of us do some sketching on paper, but a lot of us work right into the computer, just straight digital. It's a lot faster for us, I guess. It's kind of just sweet. Like John Eves was all... Yeah, bringing his drawing pad too. So, you know, it's kind of it's a tool, right? So it's kind of just
okay. And jumping, I think we're going back a couple of steps here, but it's something that I wanted to sort of elaborate on earlier with regards to your design process. The designs and concepts and ships and planetary vistas and space scenes, etc. That your team come up with, are these things that they sort of just imagine and conjure up, sort of seat of the pants sort of thing, or is it something that sort of, you know, Darren comes to you, gives you some criteria and says, you know, I want a planetary scene that's set on planet X, you know, with this and this in it, and then sort of it's your job to sort of design something that's based around those criteria. I mean, so actually, do you have criteria, or is it just sort of conjured up, for lack of better words?
Yeah, no, definitely criteria. We have a design team that's, you know, we've got writers and designers who are coming up with, you know, what's the content of this game, what we're going to see, what we're going to do. That's kind of, they make the list of things, and then that, you know, it's a huge list, and then that comes to, this goes to the DDs and the art director. Going through and figuring out, okay, what can we build and how much time we have. And, everything's pretty planned out. So the designers will write up, you know, a description of what's going on, you know, what a certain race is. Or if it's an existing one, you know, we have, you know, if it's, say it's, I better be careful what I throw out here. Say it's a race that is in the game, the classic one that people have seen.
It's a race, eh?
Yeah, a race of aliens. yeah, I don't want to throw out any
possibly
any
fishy-sounding ones.
Any, you guys would crack me up. So there's a lot of... We get lots of information. So, and then from there, you kind of read what are these guys going to do, you know, or what does this place need to look like, you know, what's the kind of environment, what's the mood, and...
tell us about the Bimphalians. Are they as threatening as that name? I mean, what's with that?
You know, I don't even know how all these rumors are going around that they're, you know, maybe they're really nice guys. You know, maybe they're just, you know, maybe they're just really, really friendly.
Yeah, well, TrekMovie.com portrayed it and literally said it is the new scary menace.
Yeah, I think that was a bit of a miss. I'll hold you guys in suspense on that one. I'm not going to reveal. That's something you guys can keep talking about. But
I hope they are nice because they sound cute. They sound like dolphins.
No, they're not nice. I'll tell you that. But I don't know if you know.
Okay.
So we can't get a screenshot or an image of a Bimphalion?
Maybe eventually. We'll see. But yeah, so they had a write-up, for instance, of what they were supposed to do and what they were supposed to be, and you know, you're like, okay, well, let's start doing some drawings. And Hyung Nim designed that guy, and he did a bunch of like little drawings to sort of see what their silhouette was like, you know, what they would look like, you know, if you saw them from far away, and then sort of found some of those that were exciting, and then he went further, blew that up, and did a little, you know, rough sketch of that, and then it was just, you know, everybody liked it a lot, so. Just he finished that out, and then they built them and textured them, and I think he's even animated.
Everybody's looking forward to that.
Yeah, so he's cool. You know, he's cool. So, but yeah, we get a lot of information. It's not just out of our head. And if it's a canon-based character, you know, it's like, okay, well, how far are we going to take these people forward? You know, what improvements can we make is usually one of the things, you know, to think about, like, for instance, the Gorm, you know. Are we going to put the guy in the rubber suit in or do what Enterprise did, or are we just going to say, hey, you know what, we can make this way cooler than those guys did? And, you know, not to say, I mean, the Gorm is classic, but, I mean, it was the 60s, so what are you going to do?
Well, if I had to pick and choose which image that I'd want to see now, I'd go ahead and have to say I'd rather see the Gorm right now.
Oh, yeah, I think, well, you'll have to ask Darren about that one, but, yeah. So, yeah, to answer your question, I mean, everything, it's a big, huge, I mean, it's like the crew of the USS Perpetual, you know, we have all the different departments, and we have all different efforts, and all different people doing all sorts of different stuff, so it's not a concept art, it's just one fragment of it, so, I mean, we're, you know, I guess we get a lot of input from everybody, you know, what's going on, and then we also get to see it get built, and stuff, so that's a pretty cool experience.
Excellent. A slightly different key of question here. Something that me and Kineas have been thinking about and have been chatting about is that sort of one day, you know, we'd love to see some sort of book or compilation, you know, the art of Star Trek Online. Sort of a compilation of all of the design stages, etc., that went into Star Trek Online. So I'm just curious, I mean, are all the various drafts and concept stages and, you know, and various bits and pieces and stages that you go through, are they all being filed and kept, you know, and locked away safe for the future, you know, so if ever there was going to be sort of the art of Star Trek Online, you know, that would be possible?
I mean, of course, we'd love to share the art that we've done and stuff. I mean, you know, it'd be great to get that stuff out there. I mean, we'd love for the fans to see that. I mean, because it's really, we're doing it, you know, to make the game, but also for the fans and for ourselves. And it's, so hopefully that happens. I mean, it's cool, like, since it is Star Trek, I mean...
That's right, it's historic now.
You know, it's Star Trek. People want to see it, and... you know, we'd love to share it. So I'm not sure what's going to happen with that, but we definitely have all the art. You know, none of it's getting thrown out. So we want to, you know, we will show it. So, so hopefully, yeah, that'd be really cool, and we'll probably see. It's something we don't think about right now because we're so, so far away from thinking about that. So, but definitely, we're keeping everything, and everything's. That happens, and we got it all ready. So,
well, that's,
yeah, I'll keep it on a wish list.
Definitely good to know. Again, sort of a different key of question here. Aside from the art side of Star Trek Online, you know, aside from the area that you're primarily involved in, what have you seen so far in terms of Star Trek Online that's got you really excited about it?
Oh, jeez. Well, tons of stuff. I would say pretty much everything that's come out from stuff is actually like the in-game stuff. Is all of it's really exciting. Personal favorite, of course, is seeing the ships that, you know, and you do the concept and you get to see it. And so for me, it's a real rush to be able to see. You know, you remember when you did the doodles, like the thumbnails, you know, thinking it up, and then you draw it, and to see it, you know, built and realized and, you know, flying around. That's a really special moment. You know, you get, really get to. It's really exciting to see that stuff. So for me, that's a, so far, that's been my personal favorite. I mean, everything's awesome, but for me, you know, it's kind of gets me all misty.
Yeah. That's awesome to hear.
So, sort of leading on from that a little bit, the last time that we spoke to Darren on Hailing Frequency, he stated that you guys actually had sort of some sort of internal alpha, for lack of better terminology, where, you know, you had sort of a star base and a ship in the game, and, you know, you were starting development of, I think it was Epsilon Sector. So I mean, the question that would be interesting to ask is, have you or any of the members of the team that you sort of interact with on a daily basis, have any of you sort of got to go into the engine that you've got so far and explore some of the aspects that have been developed thus far?
Yeah, we got a chance to fly around. I mean, I don't know what I can share about that, but definitely got a chance to fly around and see stuff. The station, getting to see that station that you've seen the concept art for in there too, that was also very impressive to see and realized as well. And also the planets look awesome. I haven't seen planets look that good in the game. Much better than even TNG's awesome planets. Shows, but they're pretty good looking. So there's some really great looking space, looks great. So I don't know how much I can share about that, but definitely seen, you know, when it comes to chance of water on stuff.
And leading on from that, not sure if you can answer this one. I'm gonna try. You know, we were told by Darren that Epsilon Sector was, or Epsilon Quadrant, or whatever you want to call it, was the area of space that was being worked on. And I think he put forward Riser as the name of one of the planets that was being actively developed at the time. I mean, can you tell us how Epsilon Sector is going? You know, how was the development of that sector progressed? And what's Riser like?
Yeah, I can't really.
What's Riser like?
Well, Risa, you know, like everything else, we've added our own, you know, touch to it, but it's definitely, you know, it's interesting because you watch the show and you're very constricted to where they actually walk around, you know, and they always did a good job in the show of making you feel like you've seen more than you did, but, you know, for us, you know, you're going to be able to walk around everything, so you got to actually make it all work, so... you know, the paintings, the concepts for Risa are really sweet. Rob Brown did a nice image of Risa, so it definitely feels like Risa. So, but as far as development and all that stuff, yeah, I can't answer those ones.
I'm actually curious now. I have to ask this one. I can't resist. There was this episode of Deep Space Nine set on Risa, where we saw them all go to Risa. And Quark had these little statues that are sort of like Ryzen.
The ones that he gave
things.
To
Picard. Yeah,
to
you know the ones I'm talking
made
about.
Picard,
the Horgon.
The Horgon. Are they on Riser in Star Trek Online? I hope they are.
Oh, I hope so. I definitely hope they're in there. I mean, come on, it's Riser, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so does every other science fiction geek in the whole world, yeah.
Yeah,
no doubt.
I don't know what they're going to... I mean, I don't know. But I hope they're there. I mean, come on.
Okie dokie. We have now, apparently, reached the end of the list of questions that I've got in front of me. Kineas, anything sort of final that you want to ask?
No, I think we covered all the bases. I'm sorry if I did miss any questions.
Absolutely. Okay then, I guess we're done. Ryan Denning, thank you very much for taking an incredible amount of time, sort of 1 hour, 38 minutes and 50 seconds, to sit down and chat with us and talk to us about all things artistic in Star Trek Online. It's been great talking to you.
Well,
I really liked. I really liked being right there in the studio with you.
Yeah, it's good times here. I just want to, you know, thanks for having me on, and just say, you know, also to the fans that are, you know, really diligent about putting in all the information about the ships and stuff like that. I've read it, you know, gone through that stuff, and it's really cool to see everybody sort of trying to figure out what these ships do and stuff. It's been really, it's been a real joy for me to see that all the interest and stuff like that. So, you know, and also this could be. It's going to be an awesome-looking game. You guys are going to be really, really, I think everybody's going to be really impressed with what they see. So I wouldn't worry too much about the, you know, it's in good hands, I think, so.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just going to say it again. Thanks, Ryan, for talking to us, and as well as the other guys that you've got there in the office. I think Brian and Mikola, you said they were called?
No,
good
Brian.
Luck, guys.
Brian,
Kella,
and Young.
Been
wish you all the best out here.
Yeah, been great hearing from them. Okay, folks, we're going to move on a little bit now. We're nearing the end of this particular episode of Hailing Frequency, but we've still got one of our usual segments left over, and that is Mr. Giuliano's Stozone. So you've had sort of an hour and a half of Star Trek Online goodness from Mr. Denning, so now it's over to Mr. Giuliano. For more Star Trek Online brilliantness. So we'll be back very shortly, people.
Now that I've been to the future and I've played Star Trek Online, I have to go back and tell them what it's like. You and the Enterprise crew have to take me back, Captain.
Red alert! All hands to battle stations! Engage!
Welcome to the 5th edition of Mr. Giuliano's Stozone on Hailing Frequencies.
Report.
According to our astrometric readings, we are in the 21st century.
This is the time. This is the place. Good work, Commander Data. Go ahead and beam me to the surface. I gotta get started. I'll do my best to follow the temporal prime directive. But I can't promise anything.
Picard to Enterprise. Energize.
All right, welcome to Stozone 5. I am your host, Mr. Giuliano. And this week's edition, we'll be covering the topic of ground combat in Star Trek Online. Now, as I mentioned last week, ground combat will encompass 60% of gameplay, maybe a little bit higher, maybe as much as 70%. But don't look for ground combat to be half of the game and ship combat to be half of the game. It's not going to work out that way, unfortunately. Not at the beginning, at least. Now, ground combat in Star Trek Online will be largely reminiscent of what we've seen in MMOs before. We'll have a third-person view that'll be switchable to a first-person view. Different characters will have different sets of abilities, from ranged combat to melee combat to buffing and healing party members to debuffing enemy characters. But there are some areas where Star Trek Online will provide some innovation, mainly in the area of the personal force field. Now, the personal force field has several distinct advantages to it, which I believe most people haven't even thought about yet. What are these? Well, first of all, the personal force fields of those in the engineering and tactical departments will be naturally a little bit stronger than those in the science field, just because their skill sets give them certain advantages and allow them to improve those systems. But a personal force field may do more than simply protect you. For instance, in a party atmosphere, you could join your shield up with those of the other members of your party, thereby strengthening everyone's shields. Or perhaps itself could be used as a weapon. You could turn your shield on and run into somebody, frying them almost instantly. Perhaps when an energy weapon is fired at your personal shield, some of that energy is transferred to the other equipment in your inventory, strengthening some of it. Now, anyone will be able to choose whether they want to concentrate on ranged attacks or melee attacks. But buffing and debuffing will mainly be limited to those in the science field. Don't feel left out. Those in the engineering and tactical fields will have buffs of their own to acquire. Healing, however, will be strictly science. Engineering and tactical officers may be able to use medkits, but if you get the Trillian Plague from that hot chick on Ryza, I suggest you see a medical officer immediately. Now, as I said before, you will have different skill sets you can specialize in, ranged combat, melee combat, and skill sets that allow for buffing and debuffing. And those will be up to you, the character, whatever you'd like to play, whether you like to be up close and personal with a Batleth, or you'd rather be down the road a little ways with your pulsed phaser rifle, your Klingon disruptor rifle. You will have all of these options in Star Trek Online. Now, don't expect just combat. There's also plenty of room for puzzles and plenty of room for rescuing or maybe even taking a few hostages. Ground combat in Star Trek Online is going to have a lot of familiar pieces and a lot of new ones. I look forward to it. Alright, that's about all the time we have. Got to get back to playing Star Trek Online in the future. Commander Riker, status?
All decks report ready. Helm standing by.
Mr. Data, laying a course for the 24th century. I suspect our future is there waiting for us.
Course laid in, sir.
Make it so.
Thanks for listening to Mr. Giuliano Stozza on Hailing Frequencies.
This podcast is proudly listed at the best podcasting directory on the internet, podcastpickle.com. We now return you to your regularly scheduled download, already in progress.
Star Trek Enterprise. Temporal Cold War. A Half-Life 2 total conversion. One ship and her crew.
Full impulse. Take us out.
The depths of the expanse and the enemies that you will face.
Plot course to intercept.
Prepare to engage.
Prepare for the Enterprise experience you have always craved.
Ready weapons.
Target phase cannons.
Prepare to launch photonic torpedoes. I need those systems back online.
Drip, I'll need all the power you can give us. Initiate warp now.
Star Trek Enterprise. Temporal Cold War.
For more information on the mod, go to enterprise-tcw.com.
Hey, want to be the next victim in Fleet Gossip? It's not that painful, I promise. All you have to do is go to www.startrek-online.net. You know you want to.
Okay, folks, we are back, and that was an interview with Mr. Ryan Denning, lead artist for Star Trek Online. How do you think that went, Ken?
I thought that went great, Zach. I'm pooped. Woo, that was a long one.
Yeah, it was a bit long, but, you know, that said, full to the brim with lots of new information.
Yeah, I hope everybody got something out of it.
Yeah, I certainly hope people will take this opportunity to visit our website and post some comments on the interview. And speaking of the website, any of you visiting the Hailing Frequency website from today will notice that we have redesigned it again. And we've gone for sort of a new look. It's something that we've not done before. It's Kinnears has actually designed and spearheaded this one. So could you tell us a little bit about it, Ken?
Oh, just the other one was starting to look a little bit old. I just get bored with things after a while, and it's time to change it up.
So yeah, folks, be sure to head over to the Hailing Frequency website and check out the site, and also check out the forums, which have undergone a complete overhaul and are now fully hailing frequency arrived. They look a lot better now. It should be much more of a fun experience for you guys out there to and browse. And also, speaking of the forums for a second, we've also recently launched a new forum section called The Cutting Room. In this section, we're going to be posting deleted scenes and special behind-the-scenes bits and pieces that are not have not been released on the main podcast or have been specially recorded for this forum section. You'll only be able to see the forum section if you're a registered member on the Hailing Frequency boards. So it only takes a second or two for you to register. So if you just register and you will see that new forum section, which we're going to be filling with loads of bits and pieces, including some deleted scenes from the Ryan Denning interview that we've just done. So be sure to go check those out. One more thing before we go, folks. Next week's Hailing Frequency, we have something very, very special lined up for you.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
As if this week wasn't special enough, things can only get better, as they say. We have been in talks with Perpetual Entertainment for several weeks now to gain access to the internal version of Star Trek Online they have at the moment. So we are going to be doing that next week, and we're going to be taking our virtual cameras into Star Trek Online, and we're going to use Fraps to record some in-game video footage for you all. That should be fun, shouldn't it, Caneas?
Yeah, that should be fantastic.
Definitely looking forward to that one, and we're definitely looking forward to having the first exclusive video images for Star Trek Online. So you've heard it here only on Hailing Frequency. Coming up next Sunday, I believe Sunday the 8th of April, so be sure to tune in. Anyway, folks, I think we're probably about done for this week, because the show has run much longer than it usually does. It's the first time that we've done a show this long in quite a while, hasn't it, Ken?
Mm-hmm.
So, that said, I think we are probably going to skedaddle now. So from me, Zach21UK, I'd just like to say goodbye.
And this is Kineas. Catch you next time. See you later, folks.
Until next time, folks, Hailing Frequencies are closed. That was Hailing Frequency, with Zach21UK and Kineas as hosts, featuring Ryan Denning, special guest from Perpetual Entertainment, with Case One Indra, Krosis, and Mr. Giuliano as contributors, and Kenneth of Hall. The concept of Fleet Radio was created by Kinnear. For more information on Hailing Frequency, visit hailingfrequency.co.uk.